millions of Muslims are mourning on Ashura, commemorating the historic Battle of Karbala and its message of resistance against injustice and tyranny. Truckloads of fuel arrive in Gaza hours after Islamic Jihad agrees to a ceasefire, ending 3 days of deadly Israeli airstrikes. Plus, the UN chief raises the alarm over the risk of nuclear confrontation on the anniversary of the first atomic bombing by the U.S. some 8 decades ago. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Millions of mourners turning out in different cities across Iran to mark Ashura, the martyrdom anniversary of Prophet Muhammad's grandson, Imam Hussein. Every year, Black mourners mark the occasion with mourning processions or ceremonies held at mosques. The rituals involve beating on the chests and reciting elegies in honor of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam. Ashura is the 10th day of the lunar month of Muharram. It's the day when Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions were martyred on the Karbala plains in modern-day Iraq. They were killed by the forces of the tyrannical ruler of the time in 680 A.D. A while ago, we're joined by Muhammad Mehdi Taib, the founder of the Al-Qaim Seminary, and he told us about the essence of genuine Islam that Imam Hussein fought for.
The genuine and real Islam always fights for justice, always calls for justice, always invites people to justice with kindness, with moral values. So, because the enemies of Islam and the so-called superpowers who are afraid of their positions, who are afraid of their, you know, positions, because they know if the message of Islam gets across to the people on the other side, to the West, they will lose their credibility. They will lose their positions. Because of this, because they wanted to hold that position, they came up and they created a fake sort of version of Islam, which is like Daesh or some takfiris in Britain from amongst Shias and Sunnis. It's not limited to one sect. It's from all sects you see a westernized Islam. When we say westernized Islam, it's obviously related to the governments and politicians, not the people.
As millions of Muslims are mourning the martyrdom of the third Shia Imam, the legacy of the Imam in Islamic history continues to win hearts and minds in the Western world, too. Our correspondent in London, Robert Carter, has spoken to some Shia Muslim converts about the issue.
Prayers, storytelling, and tearful rhythmic chanting are all expected when Shia Muslims begin their annual Muharram commemorations across the globe. Shia Muslims mourn the first 10 days of the Islamic month of Muharram in remembrance of the martyrdom of the Prophet Muhammad's grandson Imam Hussein, who was unjustly slain by an oppressive tyrant some 1,400 years ago. It isn't only in the East that you witness the mass commemoration of Imam Hussein's legacy, but also a growing community in the West, particularly of Shia Muslim converts, are benefiting tremendously from the story of Imam Hussein. We spoke to one convert who explained to us why he felt Shia Islam was the ideal faith for him.
That's what I did like about the following of the Ahlul Bayt, because I could see in the condition of black people in the past, we suffered quite a lot in the past. And when you look at the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, it's there too, that they see people suffering and they didn't like it in their time. And similarly, when we reflect on Hussein and our lives today, we've got to think Hussein didn't like that we mistreated and not respected as a human being. So it's important that we emulate what he stood for.
Despite the growth, some community leaders feel more work is needed to be done to support new converts.
I think the Shia community is still quite fragmented, divided, and I don't necessarily mean divided on hostile lines, but divided in terms of ethnic lines. But alhamdulillah, it is spreading by people themselves investigating Islam, people who were Sunnis before investigating Islam and coming to Shiaism themselves, like myself, for example.
Shia Muslims currently make up about 15% of the estimated 3 million Muslims in Britain, with well over 100 mosques across the nation. Ensuring Imam Hussein's memory is being shared like never before. Robert Carter, London.
In other news, a convoy of fuel trucks has entered Gaza Strip hours after the Palestinian Islamic Jihad agrees to a ceasefire with Israel. The fuel was delivered through the southern crossing into the besieged territory, and that after 3 days of airstrikes and retaliatory attacks. The fighting was triggered by an Israeli strike that assassinated a leader of the Palestinian resistance movement in Gaza on Friday. The Israeli aggression killed 45 Palestinians, including 15 children. It also wounded 360 other people. Meantime, the Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad movement has lauded Palestinian people's resistance against the Israeli aggression, saying that all resistance groups are a united front. Ziad al-Nakhala said that Palestinian resistance groups will remain steadfast and determined in their confrontation with the Zionist regime. He said resistance groups have been firing rockets at Israeli targets in retaliation for its acts of aggression. Nakhala noted that the Palestinian people and the resistance front have secured achievements in their fight. The Islamic Jihad leader said that the resistance front has set conditions for an Egyptian brokered truce to enter into effect, including the release of two of its prisoners. He said that the resistance front managed to force its conditions on the Tel Aviv regime. He also thanked Iran for supporting the Palestinian nation. Nakhala made the comments in a presser held following the announcement of a truce that ended Israel's latest bloody onslaught against the Gaza Strip. The Secretary General of Hezbollah movement says that retaliatory attacks by a resistance front against Israel prevented the regime from performing more acts of aggression. Said Hassan Nasrallah made a comment in a televised address referring to the truce that took effect between Israel and the Islamic Jihad in the Gaza Strip. Nasrallah says that it was clear that Zionist enemy was trying to stop the conflict as it could not take more retaliatory rocket attacks from Gaza. He added Israel's conditions did not allow the regime to continue its military aggression. Nasrallah also praised Palestinian people's determination in their struggle. The Hezbollah leader said resistance groups are strong enough to impose their conditions on the Zionist enemy. Three days of Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip has led to the death of dozens of people, including women and children. The atrocities came to a halt after a truce was announced. The reasons for the Israeli aggression are now in spotlight, with the regime claiming its strikes were preemptive.
Gaza was flashed bright by explosions as Israeli artillery and other weapons targeted what they say were weapons factories and rocket launch sites belonging to the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Following the latest round of aggression initiated by the Israeli military, an aerial duel was also held as rockets were fired from Gaza towards Israel, some intercepted by the Israeli Iron Dome anti-missile system, yet many penetrated deep inside Israel, reaching as far as Tel Aviv. Earlier, in a televised address, the Israeli Prime Minister said the regime had zero tolerance for attacks from Gaza and that isn't interested in a wider conflict in Gaza, but will not shy away from one either. Israel has labeled the latest round of aggression as a preemptive operation. It says it aimed to thwart alleged planned rocket attacks by the Islamic Jihad. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad called the initial Israeli bombardment a declaration of war, firing a barrage of at least 100 rockets into southern Israel. Around 13 people were taken to the hospital with minor injuries. Some reports have, however, indicated that many Israelis were killed in the retaliatory attacks. In response to the Israeli aggression, the Al-Quds brigades launched attacks on cities across the occupied territories. Hamas also announced its support for the Islamic Jihad and said it would respond to the strikes. Israel claims it targets military sites, but similar to all other attacks by the regime, civilians seem to be on the receiving end of the rockets.
Definitely, this is a war crime. It's a war crime in itself. The bombing in itself is a war crime. The siege of Gaza and the blockade for 15 years is a war crime. The starving people, cutting off the electricity and cutting off the water supply and cutting off the ability for Palestinians to import much necessary food and building supplies and medicine and allow people to leave and come back is a war crime in itself. This is not acceptable. And that's one thing. The second aspect of it is that the fact that Israel has claimed and actually publicly announced that it is using this as a preemptive in itself is also a war crime, because even in international law of war, you are supposed to respond in a proportionate manner if you are being attacked. Actually, even this time, Israel itself admitted that there has been no provocation. Israel has been provoking again and again and again, and has been provoking the Palestinians in order to create a war with the Palestinians and in order to punish Palestinians again and again. So Palestinians have not done anything yet, and so Israel went and bombed and killed so many children, so many civilians, has destroyed again Gaza. This is apartheid. This is a crime against humanity.
Israel has continued its atrocities against Palestinians over the past years. The United States is particularly complicit in this regarding its tacit support for the Tel Aviv regime. During this latest episode, the U.S. urged all sides to avoid further escalation. But turning reality on its head, it added that the U.S. absolutely and fully supports Israel's right to defend itself. And that's a green light to that regime to continue with its bombing campaign.
The United States has time and again vowed to support Israel. This includes the U.S. President's latest trip to Israel, where he pledged full military support for Israel with regard to the Iron Dome, a new laser system, and other military support. And now regarding the latest round of attack against Gaza, the U.S. ambassador to the regime said Israel has a right to defend itself. That is a green light for Israel to continue with its rocket attacks. The U.K. Foreign Secretary also echoed similar remarks, adding that the kingdom stands by Israel.
Biden has continued support for Israel unconditionally. He repeated support for Israel and quote-unquote its security when it is not even threatened. It's the one that's threatening the security of the Palestinian people, including the children, women, elderly people, disabled, everybody. Israel is threatening the security. It's not the other way around. So for the United States to go around and for Joe Biden making so many promises during his campaign against Bush, against Trump, that he was going to roll back many of the aggressive actions of Trump, which were already before Trump, not really happily during Obama as well, and Joe Biden was his vice president. They were actually very problematic against the Palestinians. For Biden not to even reverse the steps, the aggressive steps that Trump has taken against the Palestinians, but to continue military aid, economic aid, collaboration with Israel, justification for Israel's attack on, it is giving a green light, and it is exactly the way we all understood it.
Those statements have, however, drawn criticism from the United Nations. The UN Special Reporter on the Occupied Palestinian Territories slammed the U.S. for the remarks and stated that Israel cannot claim that it is defending itself in this conflict. She also condemned the regime's attacks as illegal and irresponsible. Meanwhile, the office of the Palestinian president called this week's attack a dangerous escalation. The regime's attacks was also followed by a closure of two border crossings with the Gaza Strip. But Palestine has witnessed such acts of aggression from time and again, and the heaviest price is always paid by the civilians. The Gaza Strip has been under an Israeli blockade since 2007. That is 15 years of a blockade. Israel has also waged many wars against the Gaza Strip and killed scores of Palestinians, yet there's no mention of this, while Russia's war in Ukraine takes center stage on a daily basis.
Now, moving on, the United Nations Secretary General warning that the world is facing the risk of a nuclear confrontation.
This is the moment when the risk of a nuclear confrontation is back, something that we have forgotten for decades. This is the moment, as I said, to ask the nuclear armed countries to commit to the principle of non-first use.
Guterres says that nuclear armed countries must also commit themselves to not to threaten other states with nuclear attacks. The UN chief says that no one can accept the idea of a new nuclear war. Guterres made those comments in Tokyo after attending the ceremonies to mark the 77th anniversary of the U.S. nuclear attacks on Hiroshima. Guterres also warned on Saturday that signals of a nuclear war are flashing red, noting that the only solution to the nuclear threat is not to have nuclear weaponry at all. Iran has strongly condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran and Islamic sanctities by a small group in the German city of Hamburg. Foreign Ministry spokesman says that a blasphemous act, which took place outside of the Islamic center of Hamburg, is a stark example of sedition and hate mongering. Nasser Kanani warned against dangerous consequences of such seditious and insulting moves, saying that they're another face of Takfiri and Daesh-like violence and extremism. He said governments that claim to be advocating freedom and human rights must oppose such moves. He urged the German government to take immediate and strong measures against those making such insulting moves, including through rapid judicial action. Kanani says that global arrogance and Zionism are behind those seditious acts, and he urged Muslims and Islamic countries to form a united front in the face of plots hatched by the enemies of Islam. And that's a wrap for this broadcast from Tehran.
You. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
Iran will not hesitate to defuse the dangers to the region posed by the weapons of mass destruction of dastardly states if they continue with their inhuman policies of the slaughter of the innocents, says Kayhan, international staff writer, in an article published under the heading Iran's Means of Defense Proves Commitment to Peace. Stay tuned for more. Islam is the religion of peace, and true Muslims never resort to violence and bloodshed, especially those in power and possessing the might and means, as well as the technology to develop state-of-the-art armaments. The weapons, however, they produce are not meant for initiating wars and occupation of other lands, but as deterrents against would-be invaders and for defending their faith, country, and interest when wars are imposed by aggressors and terrorists. As the Noble Quran says, prepare against them whatever you can of military power and war horses, owing thereby the enemy of Allah and your enemy and others besides them who you do not know, but Allah knows. True to the divine commandment, the Islamic Republic of Iran, which was the victim of a devastating eight-year war in the 1980s, imposed by the U.S. through Saddam of the repressive Ba'ath minority regime of Baghdad, spared no efforts to upgrade its means of defense in order to save the country, but never resorted to the use of any weapons of mass destruction that would kill innocent people. Even when the cowardly enemy bombed Iranian combatants and border civilians with the internationally banned chemical weapons supplied by the West. This is ample proof of Iran's firm adherence to the Almighty Creator's injunctions, as the Noble Quran says, "Whomever kills a soul without its being guilty of manslaughter or occupation on the earth, is as though he had killed all mankind, and whoever saves a life is as though he had saved all mankind." Thank God, today Iran has succeeded in building a formidable array of the most sophisticated weapons that have proved their mettle against the military hardware of the big powers in the wars ignited in the region by the Zionist entity, the terrorists, and the American client regimes. Iran, which has mastered the nuclear fuel cycle for peaceful purposes and, in spite of being fully capable of assembling warheads, has ruled from a position of strength that use of weapons of mass destruction is haram or religiously forbidden, has every right to defend itself through possessing effective means of deterrence in order to discourage the cowardly regimes from taking undue advantage of the Islamic Republic's humanitarian policy by threatening it with the unconventional weapons in their arsenals. In other words, Iran will not hesitate to defuse the dangers to the region posed by the weapons of mass destruction of dastardly states if they continue with their inhuman policies of the slaughter of the innocents.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are focusing on the 16th sermon, where Imam Ali alayhi salam lays down the strategy behind him taking over this governance and this important role of leading the Muslim Ummah. And we discussed that one of those things that he's going to do is that he's going to allow the Muslim Ummah to come back to a state where everyone who deserves truly an opportunity to progress, to go ahead, he will definitely be given that opportunity. This is the justice of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And then later on he goes on to say, أَلَا وَإِنَّ الْخَطَايَا خَيْلٌ شُمُسٌ حُمِلَ عَلَيْهَا أَهْلُهَا وَخُلِعَتْ لُجُمُهَا فَتَقَحَّمَتْ بِهِمْ فِي النَّارِ. Then Imam Ali alayhi salam says that, look, the problem with the Muslim Ummah today is the fact that they have held on to some mistakes, some wrongdoings, and they don't want to leave those. They want to tightly hold on to them, and that is going to cause them destruction.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We're talking about this statement of Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he says, "Ala wa inna al-khataya khaylun shumusun." That, O people, that beware, that certainly mistakes, wrongdoings are like horses, but that's not normal horses. These are wild horses, which are made to carry their people. The people who climb those horses, who make those mistakes and want to stick to those mistakes, وَخُلِعَتْ لُجُمُهَا, while the reins of the horses are removed. So Imam Ali alayhi salam is giving an example here. He is drawing a parable that if a community decides to continue with its mistakes, does not want to leave those mistakes, they know that mistakes are such that they carry that person, that community that wants to continue to live in the mistaken manner, in the wrongful manner, it carries them. But then this horse is wild, and at the same time, it doesn't have any reins. And because it doesn't have any reins, you cannot control it. And because it is wild, this horse, you can imagine, it can take you and throw you into a valley. This horse can take you and just bang you on some rocks. This horse can, you know, overturn and crush you. It can do whatever it wants because it is wild. You don't have any reins to control it. And that is the reality of mistakes. That is the reality of wrongs, of holding on to wrong policies. When you know that you have made a wrong policy in the society, a mistaken policy, then know that if you're continuing to bow down to that wrong policy, to that mistaken policy, then it's like going to take you and destroy you. Look at the world today, and you will see those governments that instated wrong policies. Look at them. Those wrong policies are destroying them. They are causing destruction. They are causing havoc. And those communities are getting destroyed. And you can see this happening in front of you. Because it's a wild horse that has no reins, that is going to take you wherever it wants. It could be drown you somewhere, can destroy you, can, you know, just do whatever it wants. That is the reality. Look at the beautiful example Imam Ali alayhi salam gives you here. It is truly a miracle the way he spoke and what he said. This is a beautiful, beautiful example of how communities continue to hold on to their mistakes and what those mistakes can do to them, what those false and wrong and erroneous policies can do to those communities.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. Imam Ali alayhi salam here beautifully gives an example and says that those communities that continue to hold on to false and wrong policies, they are like climbing on horses. They are like made to sit on horses that are really, you know, they are wild and they cannot be controlled. And therefore they will destroy you. And that's why he says, فَتَقَحَّمَتْ بِهِمْ فِي النَّارِ. Such horses, these holding on to these mistakes, holding on to these false policies, you know, making policy after policy based on a wrong foundation, all of these that you do are pulling you down. Because these horses, they are such that they are going to make you drown into the fire. They're going to make you drown in the fire of disunity, the fire of the corruption, the fire of disruption. And this is the reality. Look at, for example, the policies that are happening in the world today, whereby a few privileged people, whereby a few privileged people are given the opportunity to have capital, to grow in their businesses, to do what they want, while the few that probably have the potential but are not given the opportunity. Look at this. Look at the 99% and 1% that we see in America, for example. What has that policy led to? Holding on to that policy means that you are going to drown the economy. And right now, those people do not want to leave those false and wretched policies. And therefore, be sure that they are going to be taken down by those same policies. So in other words, those false policies, those wrongdoings, if you continue to get hold of them, if you do not change, if you do not make a transformation, if you do not accept that those who are wrong and do not take that responsibility to change, then it's going to take you down with it. And that is the warning that Imam Ali alayhi salam gives in the form of a beautiful example. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
مرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
America's role in spread of terrorism and violations of human rights around the globe. In this radio program, we shall examine the U.S. role in egregious violations of human rights and acts of terrorism around the world. Please stay with us for more. The United States is the biggest violator of human rights in the world today. On 27th of June 1981, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, a close friend and companion of Imam Khomeini, may his soul rest in peace, was seriously injured in an unsuccessful assassination attempt while delivering a speech at a mosque in South Tehran. This attempted assassination was carried out by the MKO terrorist group, which has been supported for decades by the US government in its act of terror in Iran and elsewhere. Just one day later, on 28th of June 1981, in a major terror attack, a massive explosion ripped apart the central headquarters of the Islamic Republic political party, martyring the head of Iran's judiciary at the time, Ayatollah Dr. Mohammad Hosseini Beheshti, and 72 senior officials of the country. And just 4 days later, on 2nd of July 1981, Ayatollah Qudusi, Iran's prosecutor general or director of public prosecutions, was martyred in another act of terrorism. Soon after this spate of terrorist attacks, the head of MKO terrorist group, Masoud Rajavi, some of his henchmen, together with Abul Hassan Bani Saad, the disgraced president who had been removed from office by a vote of no confidence in the Iranian parliament, the Majlis, boarded a plane and fled to Paris, France. They were dressed as women and had help from individuals who were loyal to the former Pahlavi regime. In fact, the pilot who flew the plane that took Rajavi and Bani Saad to Paris was the same pilot who flew the deposed Shah out of Iran for the last time in January of 1979. Thus, members of the MKO, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq terrorist group, fled Iran and made their way to Europe and to the United States, where they received support from various European and US administrations. During the eight-year imposed war on Iran, the MKO, or the Mujahideen Khalq organization, made a deal with the former Iraqi dictator Saddam, and the terrorist group's main base became established in Ba'athist, Iraq. The terror group actively participated in the eight-year war and helped the Ba'athist regime both in the front lines and for interrogation of Iranian prisoners of war, captured during the war. Their main job, however, was to gather intelligence, using their contacts within Iran to provide valuable information to the Ba'athist regime, information which was used in the Iraqi bombing and missile strike campaign against Iranian cities. The MKO terror group also took part in Iraqi army operations on the front lines. In addition to helping the MKO mount terrorist attacks against Iran, the United States openly sided with former dictator Saddam and entered into direct confrontation with the Islamic Republic of Iran forces in 1987 and 1988. The US provided the Ba'athist Iraq with logistic and intelligence support, facilitating Iraqi chemical attacks against Iranian targets. In one infamous incident in June of 1987, the Iraqi Air Force dropped chemical bombs on the northwestern Iranian town of Sardasht. On 28th of June 1987, the Iraqi Air Force dropped seven deadly chemical bombs on Sardasht. Two bombs fell in the crowded central bazaar of this small town. 2 further bombs exploded in the residential districts of Sardasht, and 3 bombs fell in the orchards surrounding the town. The resulting carnage was horrific. Out of a total population of 12,000 people, 8,025 were injured, many of them sustaining very serious and life-threatening injuries. 130 people were martyred on that day in Sardasht in northwestern Iran. The Ba'athist regime had used mustard gas in this cruel and callous attack. Mustard gas is a chemical agent which persists in the environment. If it enters the human body, its debilitating effects will last a lifetime, and there is no known cure or effective medical treatment for mustard gas inhalation. In another infamous incident, the US warship USS Vincennes targeted an Iranian commercial airliner with 290 people on board, traveling from Bandar Abbas, a port city in southern Iran, to the United Arab Emirates, with cruise missiles. Everyone on board that plane, including 66 children, were killed. When a cruise missile fired by USS warship USS Vincennes brought the plane down in the waters of the Persian Gulf. To add insult to injury, the US president at the time, Ronald Reagan, tried to justify this inexcusable act of savagery and even handed out a Medal of Honor to the commander of USS Vincennes. The United States has extensively violated human rights around the world and killed innocent people as collateral damage in wars, missile strikes and drone strikes, all under the cover of its so-called war against terror. No country on earth has made as much instrumental use of so-called human rights as the United States of America. America is well known for its egregious violations of human rights and terrorism around the world, but this bleak and dismal record extends hundreds of years back to the European colonization of the Americas, the genocide of the native population of North America, the American Indians, and the subsequent formation of the United States by their founding fathers, many of whom happened to be slave owners, bigots, and racists. Many of the major founding fathers owned numerous slaves, such as George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison. Others owned only a few slaves, such as Benjamin Franklin. And still others married into large slave-owning families, such as Alexander Hamilton. According to surviving documentation, at least 12 American presidents were slave owners at some point during their lifetimes, namely George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, Andrew Jackson, Martin Van Buren, William Henry Harrison, John Tyler, James K. Polk, Zachary Taylor, Andrew Johnson, and Ulysses S. Grant. 10 of the first 12 American presidents were slave owners, the only exceptions being John Adams and his son, John Quincy Adams, neither of whom approved of slavery. George Washington was the first president of the United States who owned slaves, including while he was president. White Europeans who colonized North America considered themselves a superior race, and in order to colonize America, they sought to systematically wipe out the native local population, the Native Americans or the American Indians, as they are known. Millions of Native Americans were killed and various Native civilizations were totally wiped out or driven close to the edge of extinction in a ruthless European drive to dominate and to colonize North America. The genocide of Native Americans remained a moot point, since a number of American historians have tried to portray the Native Americans as uncivilized savages who deserve what they got. Genocide was whitewashed under the guise of fighting savages. Tens of thousands of Africans were shipped in from Africa as slaves to work on farms and plantations in North America, with no pay or human rights of any kind, to boost America's economy. The economy of the United States was literally built upon slave labor. Racism, always part of U.S. history, is very much present in today's America. Killing of African Americans, particularly young black men, by U.S. police officers has become almost routine. We have all heard of Tamir Rice, Michael Brown, Daunte Wright, Andre Hill, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Tanisha Anderson, Eric Garner. So many promising young black lives wasted by police brutality. Racism and racial discrimination has become a fault line in U.S. society, polarizing and dividing America. Outside of the United States, the U.S. government has a shameful track record of human rights abuses and violations and supporting terrorism. A very interesting point is that America often cites its war on terror and spreading democracy as reasons for violating other people's basic rights and sponsoring various terrorist groups, both large and small. In 1973, the U.S. government helped Chilean General Augusto Pinochet to overthrow the popular democratic elected government of left-leaning Salvador Allende, effectively ending democracy in Chile for many decades. America regards South America and Latin America as its backyard and cannot tolerate democratic and nationalist governments in this region, which want to look after the interests of their own people. America has a dreadful record of backing military strongmen and dictators and military juntas in Latin America because that is very much in America's interest and allows the United States to plunder South and Central America's resources very cheaply. The U.S. has also harmed the peoples of the Far East, West Asia and South Asia by its nuclear bombing of the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan at the end of the Second World War, by its war in Vietnam in the 1960s and the 1970s, by its war in Korea in the 1950s, and by its support for the Israeli regime in the Six-Day War of 1967, as well as many other wars which the Zionist regime has waged in West Asia region in the 1980s, 1990s and beyond. The Iranian people have paid a high price in their struggle against the United States in the past 70 years. In August of 1953, a CIA-planned coup d'etat toppled the popular nationalist government of Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh, and the fugitive Shah, who had fled Iran, was once again installed on the throne as a puppet of the United States. For the next 25 years, the United States did whatever it could to prop up the Shah's regime and suppress the freedom movement in Iran, but ultimately it was the freedom-seeking Islamic movement of Iran under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, may his soul rest in peace, which succeeded in bringing down the Pahlavi regime, replacing it with a popular, democratic and Islamic government. After the triumph of the Islamic Revolution, the United States has continued its hostility towards Islamic Iran, plotting and scheming to overthrow the Islamic Republic. With its dreadful record of gross human rights violations in every corner of the globe and support for various terrorist groups, the United States accuses Iran of human rights violations and of backing terrorism. America's Iranophobic policies are meant to boost the sale of U.S. arms in this region, particularly to dictatorial Arab regimes, America's puppets, or allies, as some would like to call them. The United States has long tried to dominate this region through a mix of political, economic and military means, with psychological warfare thrown in for good measure. The Iranian people have sacrificed a lot in their more than four-decade struggle against the hegemonic policies of the United States. But they refuse to bow to America's excessive demands, and their continued staunch resilience towards this bullying power is quite remarkable.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him, said, "Perform pilgrimage to Karbala, and don't stop doing this, for Karbala has embraced the best son of the prophets."
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners, because, as you know, this is a very grave and solemn day, the day of the 10th of Muharram, Ashura, the day when Imam Hussein and his loyal companions were martyred and mercilessly murdered on the fields of Karbala. Much can be said regarding this day, the importance of this day, the significance of this day, and also the significance of the uprising of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Today we would like to recite for you a beautiful hadith narrated from Imam Hussein himself regarding a bit of what transpired on that day. As you know, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, on the day of Ashura, gave numerous speeches to his enemies, to his companions, he talked to various people, and these things were recorded and have been transmitted down to us. And they are words of wisdom, and they're beautiful. We can recite one for you today. Imam Hussein said the following in his speech on the day of Ashura. He said, "Beware, now this imposter, son of the imposter." And by this he was referring to Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad, the son of Ziyad ibn Abi. "This person has cornered me between two things." Means he has placed me in a predicament where I have only two choices. unsheathing the swords, between unsheathing the swords, meaning between fighting and engaging in battle with his army, and bearing humiliation, meaning succumbing to his requests and paying allegiance to him and Yazid. Then the Imam, in continuation, said the following, "And far be it that we accept humiliation. We will not submit, and we will not pay allegiance to the enemy. Rather, we choose to engage in conflict with them. Verily, Allah, His Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the believers, the sacred and pure laps which have nursed us," meaning our mothers, "and which abhor disgrace, have all of these have refused that obedience to the ignoble men be chosen over an honorable death." Meaning all of these great individuals, they would rather choose an honorable death than be obedient to ignoble and transgressive and oppressive men like Yazid. So this is a beautiful hadith, tells us a little bit about the rationale behind the uprising of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and that Imam revolted against the tyrant of his time in order to absolve himself from the humiliation and indignation of paying allegiance to him. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the uprising of Imam Hussein in his own words. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.